now you have Trump, where he's over here talking about sending long-range Tomahawk cruise missiles to Europe to send to Ukraine. How do you view this back and forth? Because, I mean, I would think that Russia has made it very clear that this is a major red line for them. And yet Trump doesn't seem to be as concerned about that as I would argue that he should be.
Yeah, then, in fact, you've seen just in the last 24 hours comments by Vladimir Putin himself, Sergei Ryabkov, the deputy foreign minister. They are really saying, no, this one's fundamentally different, because you can't just hand these missiles over. You can't even quasi-hand them over, like you could sort of say with the ATACMS, the long-range missiles. There is a launcher, and you can put a Ukrainian guy in it. He can't strike it on target because there's too many other things in the chain of how these missiles are delivered on target that requires American participation, which Russia has pointed out. This one, though, is different because unless you have a Ukrainian flying, I think it's like a B-2 bomber, one of our heavy bombers where these things are launched from, or a missile submarine that they're going to somehow launch down there. Those are only American assets, and only American military personnel can operate them, or a ground-based silo, a ground-based launcher that we only have a few of that can only be run by us. And so that's why they say this is fundamentally different, because this would be the U.S. military in total using our assets to strike and destroy targets in Russia. And they say we won't just sit passively by on that. So, man, Russia has sucked down a lot of red lines, and because they want to get their special military operation, as they view it, over with, and the defeat of Ukraine. The last thing they want to do, when they definitely have all the momentum in their favor, is to do something that now is going to draw in the Western alliance via Article 5 or anything else. And so it's not automatic that Russia would make good on this one either, for very practical reasons. And by the way, I have seen just in the last 36 or so hours, a growing anger chorus inside Russia, mad at Putin because of too many hands off, because he has not been hard enough. He has not had red lines. And there is starting to be some, from my sources inside Russia, there's been some serious grumbling against Putin that he has been too hands off and he's not pushed hard enough. So these kinds of things could put yet more pressure on him to finally take some more action. And then we have the risk of, you know, the escalation that folks like you and I have feared from the beginning of this. And this is a really dangerous time, I would say.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And that's interesting that you bring that up, because I know that in this is something Trump mentioned even when it comes to the situation with Russia as well, right? Talking about this idea that these countries are a paper tiger, that they're never fully getting involved, right? You see Iran respond, you see Russia respond, but it's not to the full extent that they could, because they are, of course, wary of the U.S. and all of NATO getting even further involved in this war. And I thought it was interesting, too, that you saw Putin mention that not only would this be the direct participation of American military personnel, but that these long-range strikes are not going to change the balance of power right on the battlefield. And that kind of stuck out to me, because it's like, yeah, the U.S. can get involved. They can send Tomahawks across Russia. That doesn't help the Ukrainian front line. That doesn't stop all of the issues that Kiev is facing when it comes to manpower shortages and weapons shortages. So how do you see this escalation of long-range strikes? Is this just about trying to really provoke Russia and get them to respond so that NATO can get deeper into it, or is there more to it?
I mean, more to it. That's enough. I mean, if there's folks who actually want to spawn a war with Russia, I fear, Rachel, that that's the case. I don't have any insider information. I can only look at the evidence on the ground. And when I see these continuous poking, and this strong rhetoric, and these now 19th sanctions package are trying to get done here, and this constant saying we're trying to destroy Russia's economy and all this kind of stuff, you have to say, what is the objective here? Objectively, there is no path, period, militarily, whether the tactical, operational, strategic level, for the Ukraine to reverse course and suddenly expel. Even if you're talking over a long, long period of time, there's no path to that. Everything continues to build up in the strength on the Russian side. The balance continues to go in the direction of Russia. It's not even static. It's not even like, well, it's been here for a while. It's continuing to go down here and up here, because Russia is very much concerned about a war with NATO. And so they have cranked a lot of their military equipment and production into storage and stockpiles, concerned that they may have to fight us. And so they're building up stocks of all these things while keeping on a steady pace at the front, but not a big one. And that's part of the frustration on the inside Russian portion here. But they are building up here. We, on the other hand, are dwindling our resources because we don't have the industrial capacity. We have incrementally increased it from 2022, unlike Russia, which went into something close to full-on mobilization, though not even that all the way. We haven't done anything more than just incremental here, and we're way behind the power curve. If we got into a war, we would not be able to sustain it. What, however really good some of our troops are, however good our Air Force is, our Navy, and they are, we don't have the capacity to sustain a conflict. So, yeah, you may have great technology. You may fire a bunch of missiles. You may blow up a bunch of stuff in Russia. But guess what? You're going to run out of missiles quickly. Russia won't, because they're already producing. They already have these big stockpiles in here. And so they can weather whatever you have at the beginning. But when it comes backwards, you can't. So that rationale should be at the front of these people's minds, even if they're evil and wicked people. Just from a sense of self-preservation, you shouldn't be wanting to poke a bear that has a lot more arms and power than you do, that you can't defend against it, and you could lose everything. And I just don't understand why people seem to still keep going down that path.
Yeah, even now, 3.5 years into it, right? And that does, your point brings me back to one thing I wanted to mention. When it comes to the position that the U.S. is in and how much we are spending, how much we are throwing into all of these wars, because the Cost of War Project at Brown University released a report this week which found that in the last 2 years alone, the U.S. has spent over $20 billion sending money and weapons to Israel so that it can wage its genocidal war in Gaza, while also carrying out attacks against Iran, Lebanon, Yemen, Syria, the list goes on. That's in the exact same time period that the U.S. is sending an unprecedented amount of aid to Ukraine. So when you look at U.S. preparations, not just to continue backing and funding all of these wars and conflicts around the world, but also to be prepared for if someone were to try to do something to us or to target and attack our country, what are your concerns there when it comes to overall U.S. preparations?
It is insane to me. I mean, let's look at the whole package in comprehension. I mean, you've had, so you said it's 22 billion, I think is the number I saw for the Israeli portion of, for all of those things you're talking about there. I haven't seen the number for the, are you aware of what the number is for the Russian side in that same period? Did they say?
I'm not exactly sure.
Okay. So we don't know, but what we do know is the 2024, the last one out the door for Biden was 61 billion by itself. And now Trump has authorized his own packages here. So who knows, maybe another, you know, several billion, 65 billion, let's just say. So there's 22 billion and 65 billion for wars that are not in our national interest, where we are not threatened. And in the process of the cash alone, it's not even just that. It's also the dwindling of all of our stocks of these key weapon systems. In the event that we get drawn into a war, whether it's one not of our making, whether somebody Pearl Harbors us, et cetera, or whether it is one of our making, whether we launch into an absurd war against China over Taiwan or against Russia over Ukraine, if we get sucked into any one of those for any reason, we are screwed. And I'm sorry to be kind of blunt like that, Rachel, but the bottom line is you don't have the capacity to sustain war. China does, because they've been aware of this, and their industrial capacity is off the charts now in peacetime. Russia wasn't, but they are now because of our actions starting in 2022. Now they are on the charts anyway. They're way up there. We're not even started. So if we start a war or get drawn into one, we will run out of all the key weapon systems, air defense missiles, air offense missiles, the long range stuff, artillery shells. I mean, you name it, everything that you would need to fight a war on the sea, in the air, and on the ground anywhere, we would run out of resources really, really quickly. And our two biggest potential adversaries would not. Why then, in God's name, would you want to spend yourself into vulnerability? I don't know, but that's what we've done.